when you're stuck in that mindset, you need to, that's what you need to fix. It's not, oh, I need to eat less portions or better food or whatever. It's the mindset that needs to be worked with before the other stuff will follow.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I'm your host, Omar Cumberbatch. Everyone who watches Game of Thrones knows the ominous saying that winter is coming. Whenever it is mentioned, the feeling of dread descends onto the scene. And in our world, winter isn't that pleasant either. In fact, as far as our health and wellness goes, it can be a very difficult time. Today, we welcome Gina Van Leeuwen to the show to help us navigate these winter hurdles. Gina is an international wellness speaker, author, and board-certified health coach. For over a decade, she's been working with a variety of clients, from CEOs and top executives to stay-at-home moms and dads, guiding them to live happier, healthier lives. Gina, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you, Omar. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Great. So, Gina, I just wanted to get the audience to get a little familiarity with you as far as how you got into this health and wellness arena with the backdrop of your younger years, which you weren't that healthy to begin with. And how did you eventually come to find that health and wellness would be something that you're so passionate about?
Yeah, and it's funny because sometimes people think, oh, well, it's easy for you because you're healthy. But I haven't always been that way. And it started out in early childhood with allergies and bronchitis, and it turned into asthma. I had digestive issues. I had arthritis by the time I was 30. I had tendonitis in my jaw, had a bunch of female issues as well, skin eczema and acid reflux and all kinds of issues. I was a mess and was pretty much just told that that was my destiny, that was my life, and I was stuck that way and would be given prescription after prescription, which didn't help, unfortunately. Well, asthma medication helped temporarily, but it didn't resolve my asthma. I was stuck on an inhaler every day, three times a day, from childhood into adulthood, and was told that I would be on that for the rest of my life. And once I figured out that it wasn't my destiny and that I did have control over my health and well-being and started to go down the path to make changes, I was able to reverse all of those health issues that I had, including asthma, with the help of acupuncture and changing my diet. I was actually off of my inhaler in 3 months. And
oh, wow.
It's been over 10 years since that time. So I feel very, very blessed that I was able to resolve those issues.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. So tell us a little bit, absolutely, acupuncture. But what specifically did you end up discovering in your diet that helped out so much?
That is, it's individual for everyone, but there's some basic fundamental principles and understanding of diet, which is to eat mostly plant-based, you know, eat from the land and avoid processed foods. You know, it's really pretty simple, but once you are sick, it can become very complicated. And because the nutrition industry is always changing and there's new information and you hear so much conflicting data, it can be really difficult for someone who is sick to understand what is going to be best for them. So that's one of the things I do in my practice is I help people uncover their own personal blueprint. You know, what really works for you, not what works for me or your family, but what works for you as an individual. And that's what makes you thrive, is when you start incorporating things that work for you and not because you read it in a book or, you know, that it works for somebody else.
Absolutely. Now, did you have a long period of trial and error with this, or were you kind of lucky the first few times around where it's like something just really worked and you just kind of stuck with it?
Both. So there were a couple of things for me that were elemental in my healing, and that was removing wheat and dairy, both of which were negatively impacting me severely. And I didn't realize that. Nobody's told me, hey, just stop drinking milk and having wheat all the time and you'll be fine. Nobody told me that. But there were a bunch of other things as well that were trial and error. I had so many health issues that it wasn't that simple for me to just stop having wheat and dairy. I had had completely ruined my digestive system. I had leaky gut. It was just completely ripped up inside. And so it wasn't enough just to do that. There were a lot of other things. And because I had leaky gut and parasites and things like that, which are very common in American processed food eaters, there were a lot of things that I had to do to rebuild that. So just removing those things was not enough. And yes, it was a lot of trial and error and a lot of confusion. And I felt like a human guinea pig. But having gone through all of that and having worked with so many practitioners, I feel very knowledgeable and very equipped to help other people through that process.
No, definitely. Then I'm glad that you brought that up. Like, first off, with the wheat and dairy thing, I'm a big proponent. And again, it's something that over the years you find out, because, you know, wheat and dairy are like things that the industry promotes. So a lot of people, when you say that, they don't look at you in a positive light necessarily, because it's like something that's been drilled in people's heads for so long. But I was going to ask you specifically, how did you find out that was your issue? Did you go to a specific practitioner and you were diagnosed as having that?
Yes and no. So when I originally eliminated the two, I kind of just did so on my own accord based on my research. And then later on, I found out that I was actually highly sensitive to both and was told by practitioners, hey, make sure that you're not consuming those. And, but I kind of figured it out on my own, but it took a while for me to, especially with dairy. Now, wheat wasn't as big of an issue for me, but dairy took a while for me to fully disengage from that. And it seems ridiculous when you do something that you know is hurting you, but there's an emotional attachment to that. So a lot of what I do as a practitioner is help people with that emotional piece of changing their program. It's not just about the food. It's how you incorporate that and emotionally how you're managing that change. It's not just about the food. So it was a difficult process for me because I didn't have anybody helping me through that until much later on. So I'd go have, you know, Cold Stone Creamery and which was quite delicious, but then I'd have a horrible stomach ache and I knew that was impending, but I did it anyway. It just took one too many times and I thought, why? Finally, I got it. Why am I doing this to myself? This is ridiculous. And I just stopped. But it took a lot of times before that, before I actually stopped. Oh. Yeah,
oh,
I haven't had it in years.
No, I'm on that kick now. I haven't had wheat or dairy for 5 months now. So the audience knows my story, but Cold Stone is something very hard to give up because the deliciousness of Cold Stone is worth a stomach ache once in a while. So I'm just saying that I can totally understand that. So don't feel too bad.
Yeah. And try coconut milk ice cream. That's my favorite substitute. It's really rich and creamy, and I add some fresh berries in there, and it's absolutely delicious. So when I feel that need for that creaminess, that cold creaminess, which doesn't usually happen in the wintertime since we're on that topic, that's what I go for. And I get that same sensation of getting this yummy, rich, creamy delight, but without the stomach ache.
No, absolutely. I'm glad that you brought up some substitutes because, you know, substituting is very important if you're going to be successful in getting rid of anything that's bad for you, which is definitely an important topic.
Exactly. And I am not one for deprivation. I'll tell you that. Life is too short to be in deprivation. So I'm all about providing those substitutes and crowding out things that are really not good for you. So if you do it in a healthy way, you migrate in a healthy way, you don't feel like you're missing out. And that's the point. If you feel like you're missing out, then you are just going to play this emotional game with yourself and you're going to be unhappy and constantly craving. And that's not a good place to be.
Absolutely. You hit it right on the head. So let's talk about the winter. What is it about the winter months that takes such a toll on health and wellness overall?
Yeah, and we are knee deep, well, maybe ankle deep here in Park City. It's very much winter time here in Park City, Utah, where I live. Lots of snow is starting to accumulate What happens, though, with the change of seasons, typically it's a more drastic change from, you know, warm to, to cold. And it's interesting that all the colds and flus happen in, for the most part, during the winter months. And there's a couple of things that are happening during this time of year. Number one, there's the cold, the weather change, and the viruses thrive in a cold environment. That's why when you get sick and you get a fever, that fever is serving a purpose. It's trying to kill off the virus. It's heating up your body to destroy the virus, which is why I don't recommend taking pain reliever or fever reducers unless you have a dangerously high fever, because then you're reducing your immune system when you do that. So that fever is there to kill off the virus. So when you're in a cold environment, you're inviting those bacteria to grow, because that's where they grow the best versus a warm environment. So that's one thing. The second thing that happens is that we have tons of sugar from Halloween through New Year's. It's sugar with all these holidays, and sugar suppresses your immune system. So those two things alone can cause sickness in the body. But then there's other things that are happening. You've got a decrease in vitamin D because you're probably not getting as much sunshine. You're probably not moving as much. You know, you're especially, and if you live in Arizona, Florida, California, you've got a warmer climate, you go outdoors more, but in the colder states where we get snow, we don't go out as much, and you're not, your skin is not exposed either. So, which is why you don't get the vitamin D, but you're not getting as much movement. So there's the sedentary, again, we talked about the diet changes, and sometimes we become less social, and that, that lack of community and social behavior can cause depression, which causes you to eat more sugar, which can then lead to the sickness that we talked about. So those are some of the issues that come with wintertime.
They're all huge issues. How about stress during the holiday season? What does that do to our energy levels?
Yeah. That's a big one. And stress happens all year round, but I think because of the holidays and the stress that comes around that, the amount of money that's spent and, you know, trying to buy gifts for people. And you'd think that would be a happy thing, which I'm sure it is for some people, but for others, it is a huge source of stress, the whole gift giving thing. And, you know, all the parties, again, it's supposed to be fun, but it can often create stress as well. And stress is an immune depressant as well, or suppressant. So stress will definitely have an effect on the immune system because it elevates cortisol. Important to try to mitigate stress, take time for yourself, you know, do some meditation, you know, take a hot bath, things like that to make sure that you're de-stressing.
Absolutely. So what do you think is the relationship between, you know, your immune system and, you know, your energy? Because I know that one of the things that you really focus on is the depletion of energy during this time. Like, how do we stay energized, and what is a little bit about that relationship, and how do we improve on that?
Yeah. And well, obviously if you're sick, you're not going to have a lot of energy. So the big thing is trying to avoid that. But again, being inside and being dormant and not moving, it's really easy to get in kind of lethargic, and for some people even getting depressed. We call that cabin fever, you know, where you're stuck inside. And so purposely making a point to be social, you know, make time for friends and family where you're going out and you're being social, or having people over your home, making sure you have daily movement. So whether it's walking around in a circle around your house or up and down your stairs, or doing some jogging in place, or some yoga, or anything like that, where you're moving every single day, will help to energize you. Diet is extremely important. I find it interesting that so many people think that eating salads is healthy, and in some cases it's not healthy. And there's more reasons than what I can go into in this segment, but sticking on the subject of winter, if you're eating salad in the winter and you live in a cold climate, salad is very cooling to the body. Number one, it's raw food. And number two, if you look at it from an energetic perspective, that it's, you know, when it grows in the ground, it's growing out of the ground, swaying in the wind, you know, it has this light, flexible, more creative type energy. And when you eat that, that's the kind of energy you're putting in your body. And that can be detrimental during the winter months. So having warming foods like soups and stews, root vegetables are really important. That's what's going to keep you healthy and happy in the winter, and making sure that you're eating homemade foods if you can versus processed foods that probably contain a lot of chemicals that can then suppress the immune system. And inspire yourself, you know, watch an uplifting movie, listen to your favorite music, read some inspiring quotes, call a friend that always lifts your mood. Things like that can help energize you and keep you moving forward in the winter months.
Mm-hmm. You know, I can't let you get off that salad thing so easily, because I know a lot of people are like, what? I can't believe that one. But I've heard that before. So can you go into a little bit about the specific like soups and stews that you're talking about? Because I know that a lot of people have difficulty in preparation for stews and soups, and they really just go get things in cans, and they run to a deli and they might have some prepared things. How do you go about navigating that this particular component to adjust to the winter months?
Yeah, and you know, it's actually really easy to make soup. There's complicated ways and there's easy ways, right? There's that with everything. But I've got a book called I'd Rather Scrub Toilets Than Cook, and it's tips to getting in and out of the kitchen quickly. It's a funny title, and I genuinely mean that. I don't like cooking. I just want a nice healthy meal to show up right in front of me, but it doesn't work that way. So I have come up with some really easy recipes that are delicious. They've got to be delicious, and they're healthy as well. And I've got some simple soups in there. And one of the soups that I like to make is a chicken vegetable soup. And I'm pretty much vegetarian. I don't eat the chicken. I will actually reserve off the broth. And broth is excellent in the morning in place of coffee or tea, or even a little bit late evening versus having a dessert or something like that. It's having some of this really nourishing chicken broth. But what I do is I take some bone-in chicken, or you could do beef as well, or you could get beef bones. I will also use chicken feet. I know that sounds disgusting, but it you get a lot of collagen off the chicken feet, and you just pull them out, you know, before you eat the meal. And then you just throw in whatever vegetables you have on hand. I like to use as a base onions, celery, and carrots, but you can add in green beans and peas and turnip and whatever else you want in the vegetable soup. And a lot of spices, herbs and spices. And again, it's to your taste. I like cumin a lot, and I use basil and oregano and marjoram and thyme and rosemary and tarragon. I use a bunch of different types of spices, but cumin for me is a key spice. And then sea salt. I get a Himalayan sea salt, or we have a really good local sea salt here in Utah from the salt flats called Redmond sea salt. And so I use that, and I just let it slow cook all day long. And I make a huge batch. So I will take the excess and put it in mason jars and put it in the freezer. So every week I can pull out a new mason jar, and I've got several helpings worth over the course of a few weeks. So I'll do that. I'll make some chili. I might make a more of a beef style stew. I've got a Thai chicken soup that I make, and all of these, I make them once, but then I've got several days that I can utilize that soup by freezing it.
And I'm going to have to do this, because I'm like, for whatever reason, I think making soup is like building a spaceship. I don't know why it's like my thing. I don't mind cooking as much, but it just seems like it's very daunting to me. So what's the name of your book again? So the audience can hear it, I can hear it, and I definitely pick it up and do it again.
It's I'd Rather Scrub Toilets Than Cook.
Oh, how could I forget?
And you get it off.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to pick that up. Thing to do. It's super easy. You just throw a bunch of vegetables in a pot and plop some meat in there and you're good to go.
Got it. I got to start practicing for sure. You did mention the holidays earlier. What are, like, obviously the sugar, we know that that's a big deal. Any other things about the holidays that people really fall into the trap of getting involved in that make their health and wellness goals just become completely derailed?
Yeah, there are two things really other than the sugar. One would be alcohol consumption. That usually increases around the holidays. And to that, I would say just make sure that you hydrate. That's very important. Alcohol is very dehydrating. So the more water you can drink, the more you're going to offset that. And so my rule is drink a full glass before you start drinking alcohol and drink a glass of water in between each beverage, the alcoholic beverage that you're having. And while that's not going to completely save you from the negative impact of alcohol, it will tremendously decrease the negative effects of the alcohol, especially from a hangover perspective. So, and there's supplements that you can take that are like after drink supplements that help with hangovers, that just provide your body with a lot of nutrients. So I say, if you're going to do bad good, right?
Right.
So just lessen the effects as much as possible. And then the other thing would be portions out of control, really. And we eat so much more over the holidays than we do normally. And I just put out a video, and anybody can go to my website to look that up or look it up on YouTube. And you can probably just find it under my name, Gina Van Leeuwen. But the video is on my Unique Nutrition website. And Unique Nutrition is spelled YOUNIQUE, Unique Nutrition. And it's on the 5 tips to stay fit and fabulous over the holidays. It's a really short video, but I talk about tips to trim portions. And one of those things is to use a smaller plate. If you're using a smaller plate, obviously there's less room to put food on, so you'll eat less naturally that way. And just take a small helping. So instead of taking a full helping of you know, mashed potatoes and sweet potatoes and stuffing and a roll, you know, that's basically 4 servings of carbohydrates. Take just a spoonful, not a big, gigantic serving spoon, but I'm talking a teaspoon full of each one. And when you add all of those things up, you end up with a full serving versus having 4 servings of carbohydrate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, totally. Absolutely. Without a doubt. I wanted to get back to just the alcohol theme for 2 seconds. Is there any specific alcoholic beverages worse than others that you suggested in your way of handling it? Is there some, like you would say, with no mixed drinks or no beer? Is it, or it's just all the same?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked that, because there definitely is a difference. Best rule of thumb is straight up is going to be the best. Liquor like whiskey, rum, things like that are actually less detrimental than wine or beer in a lot of cases, but that's if you're sipping them. And they're easy to sip because they're so strong versus just, you know, chugging down something. Beers tend to be easier to drink quickly. If you mix your drink, you're actually adding to the problem, because usually mixed drinks are going to be sugar. You know, they're either mixed with, unless you're doing like a gin and tonic, there's not much sugar to tonic water. But if you're doing like a rum and coke or a margarita or a pina colada or a martini or anything like that, the mix is going to have sugar in it. And sugar will take the alcohol in through your bloodstream faster. And there's sugar alcohol as well. So you're getting double sugar. So you get sugar from the alcohol, you get sugar from the mixer. And so you've got all that excess sugar in your body. And then and it's also making it even more dehydrating to your body, because sugar is very dehydrating to the body as well. And it can give you a hangover easier than just having straight up alcohol.
Okay, that's good to know.
Another thing that before you move on, one important thing to point out with any kind of sugar, whether it's sugar alcohol or a dessert type sugar, is to have protein with it. If you have protein, it slows the glucose conversion in the body. And so that can help tremendously when you're choosing to have desserts and you're choosing alcoholic beverages, is to have maybe a handful of nuts or something like that in between.
Does fat affect the glucose level as well, like an additional fat, just like protein?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's usually fat and protein come together as well.
Okay. I know, that's definitely good to know. As far as portion controls on your plate too, like you did mention that particular scenario when I average a whole bunch of carbohydrates, like, is there anything that you load up on that plate to kind of crowd out the garbage carbohydrates? And especially if people tend to eat a little bit less meat.
Yeah. Vegetables. That's always a good way to crowd out. And in this case, we talked about salad earlier, but this would be a good time to have the salad. When you're having all of these heavy foods, following it with a salad helps push those heavy foods through your body. So it actually helps you better metabolize that food. So going out for, you know, a burger or a piece of pizza, something like that, that's heavy and greasy, that's a good time to have a salad, even in the wintertime. So when you're having your holiday parties and you've got all this heavy food, the salad is actually something that's going to help you in that case. But sometimes the vegetables are not, they're not, it's not like you have a side of broccoli or something like that, or Brussels sprouts or asparagus. It's usually like green bean casserole that has a bunch of calories added to it, like mushroom soup and cheese and things like that, which make it not quite as healthy. But having said that, you're better off with the green bean casserole than the stuffing, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the things that I can't believe it's December 1st today. So it's one of the things that I know a lot of people, you know, get into that mindset. I was like, yeah, you know what? I don't really care about the holidays. I'll eat what I want. I know that my New Year's resolution is going to be to lose weight. So what's wrong with that mindset?
Well, everybody's different in how they manage things. And for the people who don't care about gaining weight or don't care about their health and well-being, there's nothing that you can do for those people. That's the way they want to live their life, and it's their life to live. But for those people who are using that as a kind of a crutch, so where they complain about their weight or they complain about their health and they really do want to be healthy, or they want to be at their ideal weight, but then the holidays hit and they're faced with that struggle of not being able to say no, of not being able to control their diet. They're letting their diet control them. And it's not that they're necessarily letting it, but it's an emotional program that's running inside them, where their food is, it's an addiction. Their food is controlling everything, where it should be, you control your food should not control you. But when they're in that place of food is controlling them, it's really easy to get in that mindset, like, oh, well, it's the holidays, I'm just going to make an excuse and eat whatever I want. And obviously that there's nothing good to become of that, right? But when you're stuck in that mindset, that's what you need to fix. It's not, oh, I need to eat less portions or better food or whatever. It's the mindset that needs to be worked with before the other stuff will follow. Because when your mindset is where it should be, you want to do good things for yourself. And you don't feel like, oh, I have to, you know, I can't say no to the pie. I have to have the pie and I have to have the extra stuffing, or you just don't, it's no longer an issue for you. Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense. Cause like, you know, okay. I'm all about mindset, and I know that this time of year, like, even, which I was going to ask you, my follow-up question is like, you know, at work, I know at work, like, you know, people bring nothing but, you know, desserts and junk food, and people just, it's in your face all day. so it does require a very strong mindset and a perspective on how to, like, really avoid that and not figure, okay, just use it as an excuse to eat because it's just there. So I definitely think that that's very important. Do you have any tips for that as far as, like, you know, again, the food being around 24 hours a day? How do you guide someone in that situation?
Yeah, and it depends on where you're at. Like I said, I used to have terrible cravings, and in a situation like that, it would be very difficult for me to control myself. Once I was able to remedy the cravings where they just didn't exist anymore, both emotionally and physically, it doesn't matter. Those things can be around me, and I just have no desire or little desire. Some things, if there's a homemade piece of pie, you know, somebody brings in something that's homemade and it's something that I can eat and it's not going to bother me, I might have a little bit. I have no qualms with having dessert every now and again. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. There's something, it's only when you're addicted to it and you feel like you have to have it and you can't say no, that's when it's a problem or something you have all the time. So don't get me wrong. I have no qualms with having a pleasurable snack every now and again. You just don't want to have it be a regular thing. So back to your question about having it around the office, again, it's going back to that emotional addiction that a person has to food. So if you're drawn to the food, it's better to try to stay away from it. And mm-hmm. if it's a small office, then you can get everybody on board to not bringing those things in. That's your best case scenario. That's more unlikely. So it's maybe asking people to leave them in the lunchroom or someplace that's out of eyeshot all of the time. But mm-hmm. staying hydrated and having your own healthy snacks, because when you eat, you know, some dried fruit or something like that, you satisfy that sweet craving without having to go for the true sweets, the candy and the pie and the cookies and things like that. So going for the dried fruit or a fresh piece of fruit would be the best thing. But if that doesn't work, you know, a handful of raisins or some type of dried fruit would be good, a good substitute instead of going and grabbing the baked goods.
It's very good point. So I always also like, you know, tell people to bring your own like fruit, bring something that, you know, you would think is a good substitute so that you can be literally the change that you want to be. As long as it's there, you're not the only one not eating, it's there. And, you know, you can partake in what you know is better for you. And hopefully other people yeah. might jump in, but if not, it's more for you. So,
yeah, exactly. I know my dream would be to for a workplace that everybody gets on board and they realize that bringing those types of things in are not beneficial for anyone, and they just wouldn't mm-hmm. do it, and it would change everything. It would change how people feel in the workplace. It would change, it would reduce the absenteeism for being sick, and would improve the mood of the people in the workplace. But it's mm-hmm. no easy task to get everybody on board to something like that, especially if it's a larger workplace.
Yeah, no, it's very difficult. And I definitely feel for people who have that bombardment of goodies, because they're good stuff as far as taste-wise. So it's very difficult just to avoid, for sure. I just wanted to end the show on the note where I wanted to just tell a little bit about your upcoming book, because you have a book coming out, Nutrition for Success. Can you talk about that a little bit and when you anticipate that coming out?
Yes, the book is called Nutrition for Success, How to Maximize Performance in All Areas of Life. And it's really about creating balance in the various areas of your life. And what I mean by that is, if you think of your career and your relationships and your spirituality, your self-esteem, those are all as equally important as your diet and exercise. So how do you nourish all of those areas of your life, and how does food play into that? How does food affect your relationships, your career, your spirituality, and your self-esteem? And how do you bring balance to those areas? So there are some tools in there to help you kind of dissect where you are and identify where the gaps are in your life, and then start to work to close those gaps. It's been a long time in the coming, this book. It's been something I've been working on for quite some time. So I'm super excited that it's almost ready to be released. It's currently in layout and design, just getting finished up. It will be going to print probably within the next week, and will be launched in hard copy January 11th. I may actually launch in Amazon, though, the week before, but I haven't decided yet, but definitely hard copy January 11th.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I'm looking forward to that. And I definitely hope the audience just jumps on that, because I'm sure it's going to be full with great information and helpful information, of course. Do me a favor. Just tell the audience, you know, how to get in touch with you. you know, your website, your social media handles, just so they get a little bit more information from you and just get to know you a little bit better and keep up with all the good things. Because that website had a lot of stuff on it that, I mean, as far as programs as well, that I feel that would be very beneficial to, you know, to what they're trying to accomplish.
Yes, absolutely. And I've got several ways to engage with me. And I think the best one, the easiest, is my portal. It's healthyhabitswellnesscenter.info. That's .info. So healthyhabitswellnesscenter.info is my portal. And it takes you to the other websites that I have. You can reach out to me on Facebook. If you just Google Gina Van Leeuwen, and that's V like Victor, A N like Nancy, capital L U, V like Victor, E like Edward, N like Nancy, then you can, I've got a couple of different pages on there as well. Twitter and Instagram, LinkedIn, those are all G Van Leeuwen. Those are my handles on there. And I think that covers all of them.
Okay, great.